Blog Talk Radio.
Can you see by the flow early night what so proudly we say at the twilight
everyone, and welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Gary Hines, your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight for what should be a really good show. We're going to slow things down just a little tonight, and remember, our 35th President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, on his 50th anniversary of his assassination, on this day in 1963, November 22nd, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated as his motorcade passed through Daley Plaza in downtown Dallas. The world mourned as our beloved president was shot to death in front of thousands who had gathered to see his motorcade pass through the streets of Dallas. Tonight we're going to focus on the man, his legacy, and his assassination. So tonight my panel is here with us again, to help me sort it all out, because President Kennedy died before I was even born. And so tonight I found myself this week kind of at a loss. It was so much information to go through once you started to look at his assassination. There were so many conspiracy theories, and, you know, everyone had a different opinion of how many bullets were actually shot, who did it. The confusion, it really just kind of compiled itself once you began to look at one person's book versus another person's book versus somebody's blog, and it was just all overwhelming, I have to admit. So it's just amazing how he had such a great life up until that point. And then after that, it's just mass confusion, and it's almost as though there's a conspiracy. And, you know, I think y'all know I'm saying that, but we all know it's true. There's a conspiracy to cover up what really happened. And so hopefully tonight, me and the crew And the crew being Major Christopher Bonds is back in the building. Khufu M.G. Kush, also known as Carl Mitchell, and Mr. A.J. Houston are with us tonight, and we're going to try to sort it all out. But what I'm going to tell you that we know for sure, because it's only when you get to the point of the assassination that everything kind of gets fuzzy. But what we know for sure is that he was born John Fitzgerald Kennedy, nicknamed Jack, and some people also called him JFK. He was born May 29, 1917, in Brookline, Massachusetts. His race was Irish-American, religion Catholic. He later married Jacqueline Kennedy, and they had two children, John and Caroline. He served the U.S. House of Representatives, and he also served in the U.S. Senate. He was elected our 35th President of the United States. Kennedy faced a number of foreign crises, but especially in Cuba and Berlin, but managed to secure achievements such as the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty and the Alliance for Progress. So those are some of the accomplishments that he had, but there was a lot going on during Kennedy's administration, and those are the things we're going to kind of sort through tonight. So I'm going to bring my panel up right now, Mr. Khufu Kush, Christopher Bonds, A.J. Houston. Good evening, guys. Welcome back to the stage.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, what's up?
Listen, you know, y'all, this is a sad day in history. I found myself, you know, listening to some of the covers today, and like I said, he died before I was even born. So I've never really, and I'm going to be very honest and transparent, and I've never actually delved into his assassination nor his legacy until this show. And so I found myself, like, overwhelmed with the research information on President Kennedy. Did any of you all find this, you know, the same situation when you all looked into the life of John F. Kennedy?
What situation, say again?
Overwhelmed by just, you know, I think things just got fuzzy when you got to the assassination part of it. I think it was just so much information, and, you know, I kind of felt like some of it was absolutely trying to steer you away from the truth, but then what the actual truth was became kind of fuzzy as well, so it was just absolutely overwhelming, I felt, the research about his assassination.
It was very cruel, brutal, and mean-spirited the way they killed President Kennedy. And, you know, books in the past I read on it, the conspiracy theories and whatnot, kind of gave some insights into some of the things that could transpire onto who all wanted Kennedy dead, and whether some of the recent research as earlier this week, seeing some of those who wanted Kennedy dead on the 2nd of November when he visited some places they was trying to kill him and stuff. And so there was people out there of him. He had a trail of people trying to get him.
We're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to go into that just a little bit, about just how many people he had on his enemy list. I mean, he had a lot of enemies. You know, you would think somebody who was doing that much good would not have that many enemies, but he absolutely seemed to have quite a few going against him. And you were seeing what, AJ?
No, there were two different little documentaries on today about Kennedy's assassination. And one of them went minute by minute talking about everything that's going on. But what I found fascinating about one of the ones I watched, it said that you know, before LBJ became vice president, he was the man in Washington, D.C. as far as helping everything that happened that was happening.
Oh.
So once Kennedy appointed him vice president, Kennedy said, we're not giving him any power, because if we give him power, he's going to try and take over. So the whole thing was that he sending LBJ out of the country to do all these other missions, not to do missions, just to keep him out of the White House, keep him out, you know, from doing having any power. So it was amazing that once he was shot, in the area, that LBJ said that he didn't know what had happened because they didn't tell him anything. They just circled him and tried to hide him. They laid him in the car, and the car ran rest of Parkland Hospital, and all those things happened. But the whole time he was saying he didn't know what happened until after they were in the hospital and somebody told him that the president, you know, was shot and he might not make it. So for him to have that deniability the whole time is strange to me because, you know, to have all that power and act like you don't know what's going on and not want the power, see, that's what they're trying to say. Well, he didn't think he was going to be president, but he was saying that, you know, because whoever the vice president was before him say the job is like piss in a bucket in the corner. It ain't worth nothing.
So I sent you all a documentary that was done by Lyndon Bain Johnson's mistress. Did any of y'all get a chance to see that and what her theory on what happened was?
No, I didn't.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't get to look at that. Yeah, I wanted to look at that. You're right. You did send that to me.
Yeah,
I was reading a lot of stuff on the way up.
Did you get a chance to check that out?
Yes, on Miss Brown, Madeline Brown, Madeline Duncan Brown.
Yes, what was your theory on what happened?
Well, she basically felt that LBJ had a lot to do with it, and she spoke about the meeting that they had the night before, and she named all the individuals that were not only in Texas but that were at that meeting. And some of the names that she threw out, it was incredible. But when you start putting things together, you could then understand how it kind of, to me, it gets more away from being a conspiracy in terms of just a simple, flat-out plan to assassinate someone.
Yeah.
Because all the people that were in that room are, you wouldn't think that the government would associate with them, but apparently they were the night before.
And you all, you know, even after the show, I suggest you and AJ, Carl, go back and look at that documentary. She knew all the names. She knew she was obviously somebody who was an insider, you know, even though she was the mistress of London. But she obviously was very connected in Dallas, wasn't she, Christopher? And she knew all the players.
Yes, because, you know, she was basically one of LBJ's apparent or alleged mistresses. And that night, she said not only was LBJ there, but she said J. Edgar Hoover was there. She said that both, I think it was Earl Campbell, the mayor of Dallas, and the sheriff, and then also J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And J.
Edgar Hoover played a big part in a lot of assassinations before they claimed for Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and some Chinese fellows. That's why they took a lot of power out of the FBI's hand. After J. Edgar Hoover, because they believed that he had so much power to where he was capable of murdering presidents and didn't have dignitaries and getting away with it.
Well,
but Terry, if you remember, I told you to check and see who was in Dallas the day before. That's who I was talking about.
And
I
who was that?
In Dallas the day before.
Actually, in Dallas. Tell us who was in Dallas.
Now, Agnew was here two days before Kennedy came. Agnew, Hoover, all the players in the game that had any power in the United States was in Dallas. Not as, you know, it was like, I don't know if they were scoping the area out or looking at whatever, but it was just strange that they were in Dallas the day before and left before Kennedy came.
It was like Nixon. It was like George Hubert Bush, wasn't it?
Yeah, the same people that was running the presidency after Kennedy left.
Yeah. It's just so strange that, you know, I really don't believe in coincidences, but there was just so many different layers to this thing. It was like you have to just stop and say, who do you believe? I mean, who do you believe? And the documentary that we just mentioned, y'all, I really found her to be truthful. I mean, she seemed like she was being truthful. Christopher, did you feel that she was being honest?
When she started mentioning things about Jack Ruby, I definitely thought she was being honest, more so with that in terms of some of the individuals that she was naming that she had met and had an affiliation with. And the whole time that Jack Ruby doing all those interviews, he was denying that it had anything to do with nightclubs, prostitution, gambling, all those things. Well, it's a fact. I mean, it's you don't even have to go far to just Google that. I mean, the man was entrenched with the mob. So it's not hearsay. And the thing is that he was there. Apparently, if he was there the night before, I mean, and she had said that they had been planning this for over a year. So it wasn't, this was, I believe, just the final night prior to make sure that everything was going to go right. But, yeah, I think that she was very credible and very believable because, not just because she knew the names, she knew details that ordinary people wouldn't know unless they had the affiliation and they were there at some point.
And she actually was his mistress, but she had a child by him as well. And they said he was the spitting image of Lyndon Johnson. And so, you all have to go back and see that documentary, but it was just incredible to listen to her names and dates and times and, you know, who did this and how they were connected and where they met. And she was given details like this. And I think she says she really wouldn't have ever told what happened, but they ended up causing the death of her son. And so because of that, you know, she...
The son had actually filed a lawsuit because once he found out that LBJ was his father, this was after he finished college and so forth, he filed, and then I think he had gotten out of the Navy. But you're right. He actually filed a lawsuit for $10.5 million for the estate. And I think that was filed in, like, 1973. So the son was out to try to cash in on his lineage of LBJ.
How crazy was that? He didn't know who he was fooling with. I mean, it's not funny. It's not funny, but he was very naive, wasn't he, Christopher, in thinking that he could go up against that establishment.
Yes, and Ms. Brown had basically apparently begged him not to because she knew the political ties and she knew that he wouldn't be successful.
Yeah. And we're probably getting a little ahead of y'all with the story on that, but that was just one of the theories of what happened. And her theory was, or what she said happened was that there was very bad blood between John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, and obviously they had embarrassed him on a number of occasions. And I think, was it the night before or a couple of nights before, he told her that they would never get an opportunity, that SOB would never get an opportunity to embarrass him again.
But one thing they did care, they had a voodoo doll they was passing around of Lyndon B. Johnson.
Really?
Yeah, they had a voodoo doll they was passing around of him in some of the meetings and some other things, and he knew it. And then if you notice the pictures, when you see Kennedy in front, everybody around him, because, see, LBJ had a problem because it was Robert who was the second in rank in the United States when Kennedy was president. It wasn't vice president.
Okay.
And him and Robert didn't get along. And if you notice that right after they left the hospital and when he was getting the casket off the plane, all the Kennedys left, and they hadn't even rolled the ladder up for LBJ to come down out the plane yet. There were no Kennedys, nobody around him. They just left him by himself.
And, you know, it just seems like they played a lot of games on him, or they just...
Yeah,
I'm getting a bad reception from you.
Are you all getting a bad reception?
Just from you.
Yeah, I can hear your bad reception as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the HS, man. That's the HS syndrome.
It's the way it's not
HS syndrome.
What's that? What is HS syndrome?
Homeland Security.
Is it U.S. This is so true. Let me stop. Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, obviously there was such bad blood between them, and you know, he told the girlfriend that wasn't going to happen again. But from the documentary with this mistress, she said LBJ was very well connected in Dallas. I mean, this was his stomping ground. And so they strategically planned for it to happen here because he knew he was in the clique. I mean, he was in the rich boy clique, if you want to call that, and they call some names. Christopher is not from Dallas, but if Khufu and AJ heard these names, these are names that we hear in this area all the time. You know, she was calling names like Eamon Carter and two very well and established car dealerships here, you know, who, you know, owe money in this area, and a lot of other names that, you know, people who are in the Dallas area would very much know these names. And so she seemed like I said earlier, very well connected. But that was just one of the theories, that Lyndon Johnson, with his well-connected clique here in Dallas, set up the assassination, you know, to have President Kennedy killed. Another theory, y'all, is, you know, everybody's always heard of that Kennedy curse. Is that possible? I mean, that family has had some of the most incredible tragedies to come through it. Is that a possibility, that they was just cursed because their father had made a deal with the mafia? I think he wanted John to become president, and some kind of way he did not finish paying off what he owed them or something. Did that possibly have anything to do with it?
Well, I think that part is, I don't think that I know he made a couple of deals with the mafia and the government on a couple of issues, but he went back on that once he started. You know, because when people run for office, you agree to anything. But once you see how many people I'm saying honestly, once you see how many people it affect, then you see people in office changing their direction. And all the people that back them are mad at them because they say, oh, you really trying to help the people now. You wasn't going to help the people when I gave you the money. But the thing about the Kennedys is I think that what really happened was passed down to brothers that they knew. So to keep anything from coming out, because, you know, when you get papers from the FBI, there's like 18 words on one page, and the rest of it is blacked out lines.
Yeah.
You know, so to keep those blacked out lines from being clear, I think a lot of times, every time somebody was getting in power, because I think once they got enough power, they said you can't give this information out until you get enough power to where you have enough people around you to guard you from what they've done to your family before. And and I really think that's the case.
You know, it's going down like the Von Erich family. You remember the wrestling family, the Von Erich family? You know, those guys were famous and whatnot. They started dropping off black flies as well. So the Kennedys, they about the same way. But y'all thought, I wanted to say that, I lost my thought on that. Go ahead, I'll pass the conversation. I'll come back to it.
Go ahead, Christopher.
No, go ahead. I was just going to simply say, I mean, kind of on that note, I don't think it's so much a curse as it is that the father conducted business one way. I think JFK started down that path, but then he started to turn little by little and then in big steps. So he started to upset the balance of how they did things on Capitol Hill and in Washington. And when he started to do that, I think he crossed the point of no return, and he wasn't coming back the other way. And it was everything from the money generated, because remember, these individuals that were in this group, this is how they do it. And this is how they reward each other, and this is how people become governors, this is how people become senators and vice presidents and so forth. So LBJ pretty much knew there was not going to be any way, as long as the Kennedy family and brothers were around, that he would ever be president. So the only way for him to be president is to be vice president and then get rid of somebody after the fact. But once President Kennedy had started delving in civil rights, and then his brother started, as the attorney general started putting the heat on the mob in Chicago and New York, they were not playing according to the script, and they were starting to mess it up at that point.
But didn't also, wasn't it clear that, you know, he died in 63, that he was going to run again in 64, and that Lyndon Johnson was not going to be on that ticket?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I know Robert Kennedy, had he run, him and LBJ didn't get along, so LBJ was not going to be anywhere on the ticket.
So they were going to take him. That was another thing, that they were going to take him off of that 64 ticket. And so, you know, the other thing, big elephant in the room, the Federal Reserve issue. Wasn't there some auditing that John F. Kennedy wanted to do to the Federal Reserves, or phasing out the Federal Reserves, that became an issue as well?
Oh, definitely.
Well, yeah.
You messing with the Gettys and the Rockefellers and all that thing, so he just didn't stir the cauldron with the little people. He had the people that was in charge of everything, Getty's, Rockefellers, all the old money and the old families that had set this whole system up.
So, and plus he wanted to sign a desegregation bill, that really angered the Southern right-wingers who hated that. You know, they already hated Lincoln for signing whatever he signed, the Emancipation Proclamation, and so, you know, he shot his head off, and then so Kennedy, when he wanted to sign this desegregation bill, less than 1,000 days in office, they shot him in the head, too, so.
They did say that the white supremacists were mad at him. Southern white supremacists were mad at him because of him trying to merge with Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement and all of that.
But they didn't have any power. See, the thing is once you see how it was governed, the money that was made from after slavery, I'm not talking about slavery, from money after slavery, and because the civil rights movement was funded by Harry Belafonte, Dick Gregory, and some other people that was putting up money that was making money. And a couple of white people. But when they saw that and they saw that he was actually listening. See, a lot of people just bumping off like, oh, you know, that's the King guy, oh, that's the X guy, you know. And it was just, you know, just follow him. But when he started listening, he said, they're going to win him over. Mm. And not only that, he's without money.
Mm.
Plus, you know Robert Kennedy, he began to sway too. After the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., when he gave his speech, to telling the crowd that Dr. King had been shot in Memphis and killed and whatnot, and so he began to turn tides as well, going toward that way. And so, you know, he never made it to the presidency either, because he probably feared he was going to sway a little further and do some more towards civil rights. He began to sway away from the ideology, and so.
And that's true, and the key thing is that a lot of people, I think they underlined the civil rights movement, which was important, but it wasn't the civil rights movement that was the fear factor in Washington and among these group of wealthy white men. It was that this was now a time that actually black folks, particularly Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, were starting to sway blacks, but some whites too, in order to dictate what public policy would be. So that has a gigantic ramification. And I think I can't remember what city it was, but there was apparently, what year it was, but Malcolm X came on the scene and several thousand individuals were getting ready to riot, and the police couldn't quell them. Malcolm X stepped up, and he was able to quell them. And pretty much at that point they said, we don't want no Negro to have that much power. So it becomes a thing with public policy that they will kill you over.
Because J.L. LeDoux had made a statement that there won't be no black messiah unless he made one.
Yes.
And
he's
saying that Malcolm X had potentially been a black messiah. Yeah. So,
with that power, look at Martin. When they said, okay, the bus boycott ain't going to last that long, you know, it's only going to last a couple of weeks. You know, these Negroes can't go that long without, you know. But when it started lasting and started catching on, I said, man, and then, see what happened, Martin and Malcolm started meeting. See, nobody tells you about the all times they met together and talked. So they wasn't, you know, Malcolm was like, okay, I'm doing my any means necessary. You do your way, I'll do my way, we'll meet in the middle. When they started meeting, it was like, that is too much, that is too much togetherness. We never thought, you know, this group of people would have a unity factor, where you have both sides talking, both sides kind of in agreement, both sides working for the same issue.
Hmm,
you know,
I believe.
Yeah, theirs had different, you know, but, you know, when brothers talk about, you know, Martin Luther King, save two passes and all that type of stuff, try to criticize Dr. King's tactics and whatnot because kids are being water hosed and people getting slapped and this type of stuff here by white supremacists in the South. But Malcolm X had, you know, the enemy necessary mentality. I try to explain to them that both Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, these brothers, had the same goal for black people. That is, they wanted to see black America free. And this had different views as to how to achieve those millions, you know, the different ways they thought it should be taken, you know, the road should be taken. Malcolm X believed in the enemy necessary. Martin Luther King believed with passive peace resistance. But they had the same goal in mind, and that was to see black people free of racial segregation and racial biases and disenfranchisement, these type of things here that are going in America.
Well, let me add one more theory, conspiracy theory. they were talking about the Teamsters Union, that Robert Kennedy was going very hard on the Teamsters Union, which caused some really bad blood. And the Teamsters Union, they felt, could have possibly taken out John Kennedy because they knew that anything that Robert said, his brother was going to co-sign. So they felt like just take out the head and just destroy the whole, cut the snake off at the head, let's just say that. And so that would destroy the whole setup, so there was no way that the Teamsters would be taken down once John F. Kennedy was taken out of office. Y'all agree with that theory?
Well, along with that, somebody tell me what happened to Agnew. What did they find on Agnew to get Agnew out of the way so Nixon can move up?
I don't know. What did they find?
I don't know.
Now, they had a little Rotary Club going on because everybody that was in Dallas actually became in that little White House echelon, and everybody had their own time of power because they had the same, everybody knew the story.
Yeah.
Whatever that story is, we don't know the story.
And you know what's amazing, though, and if you, again, going back to that documentary, this was a whole lot of backroom meetings, you know, private, you know, meetings between this clique of people, and all of these people, like you said, rose to power after Kennedy's death. And so it does kind of make you wonder what the heck was really going on. I mean, it just seems that, and then, you know, first of all, we're going to talk about the shot, and then we're going to talk about the Warren Commission that was established to determine who took the shot. So let's first go to the shot. Do y'all believe there was one bullet, three bullets, or four bullets? I mean, because, you know, you have to believe that. I'm sorry?
But they say three. They say three,
okay.
But Lee Harvey Oswald, they killed Lee Harvey Oswald because he said he was paid to shoot the governor. Which I really believe.
Oh, okay.
See, I believe that you in this open area, in this area where you can be caught. But you're not paid to shoot the main man. You paid to be there with the rifle to get caught.
Okay, right. So he was Lee Harvey Oswald was there to take out Governor Connally.
That's what Lee Harvey Oswald said before they kind of erased his voice.
Well.
Well, you know, my reports, you know, he was denying the shooting because, you know, he killed two people that day. He killed the president, then he killed the officer Tippett, you know, coming down in South Dallas. I think I see him in South Oak Cliff walking down the sidewalk Officer Tippett had, and he fit the description of the person that they was had as a suspect in the shooting of the president. And so,
okay, but you know what? Let's deal with the suspect issue. First of all, the person who identified Oswald identified him from the ground. If he was six stories up, how could you know that he was 5'10"? I mean, it just doesn't even make any sense.
Because he was paid to shoot the governor. They had all the info. He was a background.
Whoever told the police, oh, I saw the shooter and he was 5'10", how could you give that description? It almost seems like nobody really gave that description, that the police knew where Oswald lived and they were going there to get him. And the story kind of goes like this, y'all. Oswald shot the president, then left his job at the book depository, went to his roomie house where he lived, changed clothes, and then was walking down the street when he encountered the police officer who realized that Oswald allegedly fit the description, and then Oswald allegedly shoots the officer and then goes to the movie theater. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm like, really? Go to the movie?
No, that's what I'm saying. See, at the time, we didn't have the news media. We didn't have the great media that we have and all these analysts and everybody's cutting up all the words. So whatever story was said was the story.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yep, like at the time, see, when they wrote up the story, they wrote the plot like a film. They said, this is where it's going to work. So when they told the story, nothing else, because when he walked out, how you have somebody walk all the way up that little alleyway past the police, past everybody to get to him to shoot him? When he got out, the police around him.
And also, too, with the bullet theory, I mean, if we just listen to what Jackie Kennedy said, she said that he was shot from the back because there was a hole in his trachea or in his upper neck. And as she held him, a bullet came from the front. Now, that's her first-line direct testimony, and she never changed that. So they already know that it's impossible for the only shots to have come from the rear. It's just impossible because you can't get shot in the front of your head from the back. If the entrance wound is in the back and goes through the front and then vice versa, it's clear. So the thing with the bullet, there had to be more than one. And the warrant, well, when we get into that, but you'll find out that other witnesses, when the government doesn't want, or any organization does not want to have multiple witnesses, so they have to actually put together all the evidence and facts, they just then don't interview you.
Okay, and that happened. There were people who were just feet away from the president when the shot was taken, and nobody ever talked to him. The Warren Commission never even asked them a question. So that speaks volumes. You're exactly right. So let's just say there were three people shot that day. Kennedy was shot, and it appears he took three bullets. He took one in the neck, one in the head, and I think one two parts of the head, and I think one in the neck, if I'm not mistaken. And then the person who got the bullet, Mr. Tague, that ricocheted off the curve, he was shot. And then also Governor Connally. Tague and Connally survived, and, of course, we know that Kennedy died.
My mic kind of went out, Gary.
Say what?
Can you hear me?
He took a shot in – you're right, he took a shot in the eye, didn't he?
I can't hear you. My mic kind of went out.
Okay, he took – Kennedy took a shot in the eye. Is that what you're saying? Okay, we have lost. Okay, let me close his mic and I'll try to open it back up and let's see if that helps. Boy, they are really trying to silence Kufu tonight. Kufu, I'm opening your line back up. Did that help? Okay, we're not getting anywhere with Kufu. Kufu, you might hang up and call back because for whatever reason.
I'm trying to hear you, Kier. My line
now we
out.
Can hear you. Okay, so you said they shot him in the eye as well. Can you hear us?
Your
can
mic
you hear
is
us?
Still out.
Okay, you might hang up and call us back. There were so many bullets going everywhere. I mean, it's just a wonder Jacqueline Kennedy was not killed because she was sitting right there next to him. You know, it's just really no clear explanation as to how she just didn't lose her life. So I do kind of wonder if, you know, is any truth to Oswald actually shooting at all? And if he did shoot, maybe he just got off one bullet. Because what kind of gun was that? What kind of rifle was that that Oswald was using? Does anybody have the make and model of that? And I'm not a weapons expert, but I understand that it's impossible for him to have gotten off multiple shots in 6 seconds. Have y'all heard
of
that as well?
You really have to reload and refocus with the sight. But I'll check the weapon. I can't think what it is, and I knew that before. But when you asked me, it dissipated.
But I know it was some kind of with a scope on it. And like you said, yeah. Once you took the first shot, it would have caused the weapon to move, and you would have had to reposition it and get your angle back again. And at that time, y'all, they said this happened in November, which was this particular day, 50 years ago. There was a big oak tree right there, still is, and the oak tree this time of year still has the leaves on it. So they were saying it's just an impossibility that he could have taken that shot from the sixth floor depository and was able to get off more than one shot or even a shot with a moving target and in 6 seconds. It's just impossible. Okay, cool. So we've opened your line back up. And so you said he took a shot to the eye as well. Kufu, are you there? Boy, they're trying to silence you tonight, Kufu. I don't know what's going on. Kufu's lying tonight, y'all. But I'm starting to believe AJ's conspiracy theory that it may be Homeland Security. But anyway, so the thing is, it's just an impossibility, it seems, though, that Oswald probably was used as a scapegoat, it seems, and maybe Oswald was up there to get off one shot and then be framed for the entire assassination. Can y'all agree with that?
I can agree with that, yeah. But if you look at it, the way his head moved, it moves backwards and forwards like there was two shots to the head.
First shot look like he took it in the neck and he leaned over toward Jackie? And then kind of leaned forward and then took another shot. You know, didn't he kind of
yeah,
what
that's
did
what
he
saying.
First
went forward like, first and then back. But his cap came off on the second shot.
Yeah.
The Jack was on his cap.
Okay, Kufu, you're open. And so it looked like three shots to me. the way, like you say, the way his head moved, the way he first grabbed his neck, and then, you know, looks like, you know, he rocked forward, then he rocked back, you know. So it looked like what I saw, and I looked at it several times, looked like when he took the first shot, he kind of leaned over to Jackie. She kind of cuddled him, and then the second shot, he kind of leaned forward, and then the third shot kind of knocked him back. Did y'all see that?
Yes.
Okay. That's the way I saw it, too. And so you said one of the shots was to the eye, Khufu?
No, I didn't say it to the eye. I haven't spoken that yet. I was keyed
to
my
What were you saying when? What were you saying when your line kept going out?
I don't recall. But anyway, I know that the governor's wife stated that the president raised his arm up and he had his fist towards his face and his throat after the first shot, and then. You know, the second shot knocked him, I think, to the left into his wife's lap. And she turned around. She, you know, had blood spread all over the back of the limb, bone fragments and skull and brains and stuff like that. So that's what I had read.
And I agree with you. Listen, if you want to chime in tonight on what we're talking about, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the man, the legacy, call us up at 347-850-8390, then press 1 to get in. Again, if you'd like to chime in on tonight's topic, we're talking about John F. Kennedy tonight. What happened? Who assassinated him? Is it a conspiracy theory, or is it pretty clear as to what really happened and who did it? We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to pick up area code 716. 603. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, Carrie, it's Chris.
Hi. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing okay. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, you know, you got a good topic tonight. Very timely, obviously.
Well, thank you. What do you think happened? You know, Chris is with the Buffalo Bullets, y'all. He's a writer with the Buffalo Bullets. Tell us, Chris, what do you think happened?
I think he got shot at least two or three times, and I think Oswald may or may not have been one of the shooters, but he definitely was the passer. Like you said before, he was usually take the whole blame. It's possible Oswald was like the first one. If Oswald shot him, he's one of the guys that shot him in the head. He couldn't have shot him in the neck. You know, that was somebody from ground level. You know, the so-called grassy knoll guy, or whatever the case may be. You know, I interviewed Abraham Bolden yesterday, who used to be a JFK Secret Service guy, and they gave him a lot of hell and everything. But he had to leave the Kennedy detail about a month or so before he was assassinated. All that stuff was planned beforehand. They knew there was a plot going on. And instead, they set him up. Because they were like, "Oh, you don't tell us how to run our." Even though most of the Secret Service guys are a bunch of drunken white boys, they really were. That's what they were, and they had a lot of hostility. They had a lot of animus and resentment towards Kennedy. Because as you guys brought up, he was always seen as making change. He's doing things for the black. He just wants to do things for the N words, you know. And so all of that. Was being played out, and his fate was sealed probably before Bolden had joined up. You know, it was just a tragic thing. And I remember Kennedy. I mean, even as a kid, I thought Kennedy was a cool guy. I mean, I'm just kindergarten, preschool, whatever. I thought Kennedy was okay, but I remember vividly the day he was assassinated because I missed my favorite cartoon show that day. Which was Second Lieutenant, by the way. And all they did was show Kennedy getting out. Okay, we all know he got shot. Put Heck of a Chuckle on. It's 3:00.
Because you didn't understand the magnitude of what had just happened.
Yeah, right. That's the thinking of a 5-year-old. You know what I'm saying? And all three channels, and notice I say three channels, that's all they showed all day long, you know, with that car coming around that tight curve, and you see some splotch on Kennedy's head. You know, you see his head snap back a little bit, and you know you got Walter Cronkite or whoever it was on whatever, depending on what network it was. They're talking about Kennedy and everything. you know, the assassin. That's the first time I heard the word assassination. I'm like, what are they killed? What do you mean assassinate? What kind of word is that? Well, that's a word that's when somebody important gets murdered.
And that's exactly what that is. Let me ask you this. So the Secret Service guy that you interviewed, was he on that detail that day?
No.
Okay.
They more or less pressured him to get out. They drummed him out. He was on that service like a couple of weeks earlier or whatever. He was close. Understand, him and the Kennedys were close.
Okay.
JFK handpicked him, as a matter of fact. There's going to be a movie coming out within a year or so about that whole thing. But buy that book, Echo from the Daily Plaza, by Bolden, that's the name of the book. You know, and when you see that, you see what a heavy story it is, because I'm kicking myself because I didn't know about this prior to a year ago. You understand what I'm saying? That's an extra added factor to this whole conspiracy thing, you know. You know, like I said, he was not on the detail that day. He was still with the Secret Service, but he was a field agent now. He was not on the presidential detail as a bodyguard. You know, he was in the field, you know, just going after people in the criminal world, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Going after them.
Let me ask you this. You know, being that close to it, how high up or how low does he believe the conspiracy went? Does he believe that the other Secret Service people that weren't on that detail that day knew what was going to happen, or does he think that it was just they were just doing a day at work and didn't know what was about to happen to the president?
He believes that some of them did know.
Ooh.
There were some, not all of them, you know, some of them just didn't like him, you know what I'm saying? He heard people say things like, well, if I knew somebody was going to shoot him, I will not stop him. He heard stuff like that numerous times. You know,
they said if they knew somebody was going to shoot him, they would have done what?
They wouldn't have done anything to stop the
shooting. Oh, my goodness.
Understand, their secret service, that's what they're supposed to do. If they're on the presidential detail, that's what you're supposed to do. Now, that is your only job. You have to take a bullet for them. Here's the funny thing. If he was on the details, like I said, if Bolden was in the car with Kennedy back there, he'd have got shot too. That's my opinion. That's just me saying.
And can I
go
respond
to something? What I did?
I was asking, can I get him to respond to something? I think what slowed the story's process down, what slowed the investigation down was, first they leaked that Lee Harvey Oswald had been in Russia for a couple of years, and we were at that little battle with Russia, so then everybody started investigating that instead of investigating the actual assassination.
Oh, yeah.
So you think the shooters may have been Russian? Because, you know,
Lee Harvey Oswald had been in Russia a couple years earlier. So, like, to sway him, and he was doing it for the Russians, like he was a hitman for the Russians. But I'm saying they leaked that out for the investigation to switch so they can clear up all the stories.
And, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was a very poor man per his wife. So there shouldn't have been any money for him to be traveling to Russia.
Well, later on in the war committee, they ruled that out, that the Russians may have had anything to do with it. But, you know, they started to say that this guy, Thomas Vallis, and Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, both of them served in the military. And I think Oswald was a Marinist. Both of them were recruited by the CIA. Vallis was to train Cuban exiles to assassinate Fidel Castro, while Oswald was to defect to Russia as part of a fake defector program. They said both were employees at locations along the Kennedy parade route. Both had expressed strong anti-Kennedy views, and both possessed rifles. They did it simply because the reason why they did it there because they had four guys that was attempting to try to, Well, it was October the 30th of 1963, the Chicago office of the U.S. Secretary of Service, in the midst of scrutiny preparation for the event, received phone calls from the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Washington, D.C., warning of four men conspiracy to assassinate Kennedy. And that, you know, that's when they're going to assassinate him on November the 2nd, they were. And so they arrested two guys, but two guys got away and whatnot. That's kind of a little report there, but it's really interesting. It's very interesting.
Well, let me ask you this. There was also that theory about the three tramps. What did anybody hear about the three tramps who turned out to be three very well-dressed men? And one of them, I think, was E. Howard somebody, who on his deathbed confessed to having a role. I'm looking for my notes, y'all. He confessed to having a role in the assassination. And I saw this on one of those Jesse Ventura YouTube videos about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But this particular person on his deathbed confessed to having a role in the assassination. He said he was a CIA operative and that he was there and a part of it, and he just wanted to clear his conscience and tell what really happened. And it's just so many players. I mean, so many players. I'm still looking for my notes, y'all. I apologize.
That guy you just spoke of.
He had or something, wasn't it?
That's right. I'm looking for his name as well. And my
E. Howard Hunt. Wasn't it E. Howard Hunt?
E. Howard Hunt. That was his name.
Yeah, he was a CIA operative. He said that, you know, he was involved, and he basically, too, you know, said on his, you know, deathbed confession that it pretty much went down that, you know, Lyndon and the others were part of what happened to him, you know, what happened to Kennedy. And so it's just, you know, you just wonder. Go ahead.
Lyndon and Kennedy disliked each other very intensely. It was a serious hatred between the two of them. Kennedy just got Lyndon there because he was a Southerner. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the value of Johnson to Kennedy. Other than that, that was it. They wanted nothing more to do with him. You know, they just didn't. So it was some serious hostility, you know, going on between the two of them. Unfortunately.
You know, what really got me, you know, what surprised me is that at that time, you know, when President Kennedy was assassinated, it was not a federal offense to kill the President of the United States. And although it was a federal crime to conspire to injure a federal officer while he was acting in the line of duty, you know, it wasn't a federal offense to actually assassinate the President.
You know, and it almost seemed that way. Let me ask you this. Well, let's start here. So, you know, Kennedy is assassinated, and a week later, Lyndon Baines Johnson puts together what's called the Warren Commission. And the Warren Commission puts together their investigation. It was headed up by Earl Warren, and a lot of their famous people sat on that commission. And they came back with basically the magic bullet theory, you know, basically, which stated that it was really only like one gunman, and that was Oswald, and he acted alone. And it appears that a lot of people that were on that Warren Commission later, again, that same group, went on to be presidents and senators and you know, high-ranking officials in our government.
They had
so you
Warren
just
Commission,
and
Commission
what?
Did report it. Years, you know, they had a Warren Commission. You know, his first commission did the assessment of the assassination of the president. Then they had, later on, he came back with the Ramsey Clark panel. Then they came back with the Rockefeller Commission. Then they came back with the guy named Church, Frank Church. They had a Church Committee. And they had United States High Select Committee on Assassinations. And so they had different type of committees that was over the years after the assassination of the president. Steady gathering information, trying to reassess and this type of stuff. But some records were sealed for 50 years, some records were sealed for 75 years, some of that was knocked down. They opened up the last records in 2017. They opened up the last records and documentation about the president's assassination, these findings and whatnot. And the reason why they put a 50-year hold on it because some people who might be injured because of what's going to come out in these reports, they want to give them time to get old or pass away or something before all that come out, and they may be implicated as part of a spy to an individual in his plot.
Hey, Carrie?
Yeah.
Just one quick thing I want to say. I know we're moving on to the Warren Commission, but here's something that is it's just mind-boggling to me. Now, they're saying that he shot the president on November the 22nd. Mm-hmm. Then, within 45 minutes, as he was fleeing the scene, he then shot Officer J.D. Tippit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what they're saying, shot and killed him. Now, how would he have even been able to do that if it is, they are saying, it is alleged that he shot at, using the same weapon, a three-star general. General Walker was his last name, on April 10th of 1963. So what I don't understand is that if that is the case, how would he have not been in jail or been in custody?
Looking
at a three-star general, but magically, several months later, he's working or back at the book depository to shoot the president.
Because he was a Manchurian candidate.
Right, there you go. That's the key. I mean, there's no way in the world that somebody would have shot at this individual and not have been in jail.
See, and I agree because, you know, they said that, you know, when he went to the movie theater, a lot of people were saying, well, what did he go to the movie theater for? He shot two people, you know, three people, or however many people. You know, why would he go to the movie theater? But a lot of people believe that he went to the movie theater that evening because he was supposed to meet up with whoever that was who was supposed to give him his next order. But really, the going to the movie was a setup.
Well, you know, doctor said he snuck inside without paying, you know, and so someone alerted the deal of the ticket officer that he had snuck inside the jail without paying this individual had, so they called the police. And so they apprehended him at the end. But, you know, he shot Officer J.D. Tippit four times when Tippit approached him, and they had an argument that ensued and whatnot, and Tippit got the patrol car, and Oswald shot him four times right there on the spot.
But one thing about what was just said about he say he shot at his general in April. So if he wasn't that great a shot in April, how did he become such an expert in November?
Very good.
Right, because he had the
very
same
good point.
Weapon, and he had an open sight apparently in this general's window, but he just narrowly missed him and
very
didn't shoot him.
Very
and he was
point.
Maybe not 100 feet, 150 feet at the most.
Very good point. And you know what? And then don't forget, y'all, there are some people that have testified that Lee Harvey Oswald, who had just – now, this is another little tidbit to go along with that. Lee Harvey Oswald had only worked at the book depository for one month. And allegedly, two people saw him in the cafeteria around the time of the shooting. Someone saw him in the cafeteria 15 minutes before the shooting, and then somebody else saw him in the cafeteria of the building 75 seconds after the shooting. So, you know, I mean, how is it that this man shoots somebody and is in the cafeteria, ain't in the cafeteria, goes home, changes clothes, shoots an officer, and then goes to the movie theater? I mean, he's just doing an awful lot of movement on foot to have
he
just
like
shot.
He liked the cafeteria a lot.
He liked the cafeteria.
The woman who stabbed Martin Luther King went to a movie theater before she stabbed him, then went to his book signing later on. So there's something about assassins or would-be assassins in movie theaters. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, really? And everything.
But I don't really believe the whole thing about Oswald going to see a movie. I really believe it doesn't make any sense if he was running that he would have gone home first to begin with. So I really think that he thought that whoever had set him up to do this, in my belief, that he had time to do whatever he was doing. And I think when he went to the movie theater, he was absolutely there to meet somebody. I don't think he was there to watch a movie. I don't think he was in there. I think that may sound like a good place to hide, but I don't think that he was walking on foot and walked down to the movie theater, encountered the officer, shot the officer, and then went on into the movie. I don't believe that.
And Carrie, during that time, Jefferson Street was downtown Dallas.
Let me ask you a question.
Now, hold up. let me make this point. See, Jefferson Street was downtown Dallas. All that was downtown. That was
really?
That was the major thoroughfare, the major place that money was made in, because Oak Cliff was not Dallas.
Okay.
That was Jefferson Street was the main thoroughfare and the main shopping area.
Okay. So, and you were saying what, Tupu?
Oh, I'm just
if you're gonna shoot someone, you go to a movie theater.
So what?
They're like Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. You know, like it's in the theater. I'm like Major Bond or AJ's who have said something about these theaters associated with the assassination. Like I said, the lady who stabbed Martin King Jr. going to the theater. Something about the assassination. These theaters got something in common.
If you were a police officer, would you search for a shooter in a movie theater?
But I mean, the movie gonna cut out at some point. I mean, a movie is only like 2 hours long. You gotta go after that or buy another
that's
ticket. I mean,
that's a good place to hide because a lot of people.
If you were a cop, would you go search at a movie theater for a shooter?
Probably not.
That's right.
And I agree. Well, then y'all go here with me. Okay, so they apprehend him at the movie theater, and they take him into custody, and I understand they interviewed him for like 12 minutes. I mean, really, do you interview a murder suspect for 12 minutes? That doesn't even make sense.
No,
I mean,
it was 12 hours.
Was it 12 hours?
Well, I mean, 12 hours. So I read today. And so they asked me at the time here in my notes today, it was 12 hours they interviewed the man.
It was 12. Okay, I got it wrong. Okay, I thought it was 12 minutes. It was 12 hours. Okay, so they interviewed him for 12 hours, and then they're moving him. And how does Jack Ruby enter an isolated area and is able to kill him like that? I mean, how does that happen? Unless
it's a hit. Well, my headphones and mic is acting up again. My headphone and mic. Y'all go here. My headphone and mic is acting up again.
Okay, we're going to close your line and try to open you back up. But how does Ruby Oswald go into an isolated area with this man surrounded by police officers and is able to kill him? How does that happen, unless it's a hit?
First, they accused one policeman that was watching they accused the policeman that was watching the entrance of the little tunnel of letting him through. Then they came back and said that the policeman that was watching the tunnel didn't see him come through, so they don't really know where he came from, but somebody let him in.
Well, but Jack Ruby had been down at the courthouse previously, and keep in mind, since he was tied in with the mob, and he basically, apparently when you came to town, if you needed prostitutes, you needed drugs, you needed gambling places to go, he was the go-to person. So essentially, he had been doing so much dirt that the police always looked the other way. So it was really not uncommon for him to be there because he was in those kind of settings in the first place. I'm not sure. I don't think he really had any kind of special past, but I think because of who they knew he was, they just didn't question it. But his motive was going to be to shut him up, Oswald up, anyway. So he just waited for the opportunity, and he knew that they were not going to take any special measures to protect them. I mean, it was gallivanting them out right in the open.
Okay, so he then kills Oswald, and he, I understand, is sentenced to life in prison, which was later commuted down to he got the death penalty, did he not? And then they commuted it down
yes,
to life
did.
In prison. Right.
Yeah, he was guilty, death penalty.
And they reduced it to life in prison. Did he serve that out?
No, he died of cancer.
Died.
Yeah, he died of natural causes or whatever shortly after that. But
sure.
He was on death row.
You know what? Or was it one of those situations in which they say he died and they just basically give him a new face and send him off to an island somewhere?
Yeah, they can do that.
Because he seemed that well connected to me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, he really did. It's kind of like the in-run guy who had gotten all that time, and some kind of way they let him go to his vacation home, and allegedly he commits suicide, and he dies, and no one ever can figure out why they let him leave the state in the first place. Kind of like
right.
I kind of see Ruby as that kind of guy back then. That's just my opinion.
Jack Ruby, I'm about to read up on a little bit more about Jack Ruby. I've been wanting to research a little bit more about Jack Ruby. I admire the way he leaned into and shot Lee Harvey Oswald. If you notice the photo and the television, a televised where he stepped into him and kind of like kneeled down and shot him above the belly button, you know, when Oswald crunched up. You know, it was a pretty gangster. I'll say that. You know, the way he shot Oswald.
Right, I don't think it was his first time killing somebody.
Go back to the line. Area code 901-299. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, Sister Carrie. I really enjoyed the show. This is Brother Ron out of Memphis.
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
I'm good. I always like these type of shows, especially with President Kennedy and stuff like that. And I think one thing that's interesting that I think people are not looking at is the fact that I don't know if you covered early in your show about the when President Kennedy signed the executive order 11110 on June 4th, 1963.
No.
That's the order to take control of it. Probably, he was really trying to get back control of the country's money, currency. Okay. Just trying to take the control from the Federal Reserve. People don't realize that 2013 marks the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Federal Reserve, which was created Jekyll Allen. And if you don't understand anything about Illuminati and Trilateral Commission, all this stuff, I mean, Rothschild, all this stuff, if you want to find out who killed Kennedy, follow the money. The money people. Follow the money. Because he was messing with people's money. Anytime you mess with people's money, doesn't mean you start getting in trouble. But you look at presidents that have been assassinated, like Abraham Lincoln. He didn't get killed because of slavery. He got killed because he was trying to take on Wall Street and the banksters. They killed him. As soon as they killed Lincoln, that's when you start having a unified currency in this country. That's when you start having Rockefeller, Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, people of that ilk. You look at, Andrew Jackson, the guy who was on a $20 bill. He almost got assassinated in the White House, but the gun misfired on the poor fellow. The guy being fired at Andrew Jackson three times. Andrew Jackson was so mad that he almost beat the guy to death with his cane. They had to pull Andrew Jackson off the guy who tried to assassinate him. But what Andrew Jackson did that people don't realize, he's the only president in history that ever got us out of debt. He paid out the deficit. The way he did it was by taking on the central bank. He destroyed the central bank. And then after he left the presidency, he came back stronger than ever. It became stronger, you know, because they had the money panic. Right after Andrew Jackson left office, was a money panic and all that stuff. So they came back stronger. But he's the only president in our history that saw the centralized banking system and won. But here's the thing, it's about money. All this is about money. I mean, you look at a war profiteering. Kennedy was going to pull the troops out of Vietnam. I mean, we were getting deep into Vietnam, but Kennedy also was about to pull us out of Vietnam. As soon as he died, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 1964, which we all know is now fabricated, Lyndon B. Johnson was able to increase presence in Vietnam. Every war that we have is about making money, about war profiteering. Lyndon B. Johnson, one of his biggest sponsors were Brown and Root Company, Brown and Root, which eventually became a part of what is now known as Halliburton. That was his sponsors when he first became a politician. Lyndon B. Johnson died as one of our wealthiest presidents we ever had. He was one of the wealthiest presidents we ever had because he made backroom deals. There was a book that a guy named Scott McClellan wrote called Scott McClellan is the father of not Scott McClellan, but Bar McClellan. He is the father of Scott McClellan, who was George W. Bush's press secretary. And he's also the father of Mark McClellan, who was FDA commissioner under George W. Bush. Here's the thing about Bob McClellan. He actually worked for the firm that LBJ's main top lawyer, Edward Clark, was over in Austin, Texas. He wrote a book that came out 10 years ago called Blood, Money, and Power, How LBJ Killed JFK. He alleged that his boss, Clark, made a deal with some of the people in power, like the H.L. Hunts and the Clint Murchisons. He's out the oil man. I mean, Kennedy pissed out a lot of people, but he pissed on people's money. And then people don't realize that, you know, when Kennedy started getting in trouble, when Kennedy's brother started getting in trouble, when the Kennedy brother started getting in trouble, Joe Kennedy was the one pulling the strings. He the one that got himself into the White House. Well, people don't realize that several months after he became president, his father had some type of stroke or heart attack. Left him an invalid. You know, he couldn't speak and talk no more. His father made the family fortune from playing the bootlegging and also doing Hollywood production, handling Gloria Swanson, and also manipulating the stock market. He was the first SEC commissioner. FDR made him the first SEC commissioner. People told FDR, why are you putting this gangster and crook into power, a position like this? He said, it takes a crook to catch a crook. So this is the type of mind you're dealing with. This is Daddy Kennedy. He made his fortune illegally. But, just the thing we're dealing with, you just follow the money, then you find out who killed JFK, because in this instance, it's not important to pull the trigger. It's more important who benefited from the pulling of that trigger.
That's
and
true.
Like you said, Sister Kerry, earlier, who benefited from the killing of the president? It's
a
very
lot of
Shakespearean.
A very lot. And y'all, this is Ronald Hurd. He is the host of We All Be Radio, and I call him a real historian because he can quote history like nobody else. If y'all look back in my archives, check out the show we did on a real history lesson, a real black history lesson. Ronald Hurd was my guest on that one. Listen, he knows history like nobody else. So, Ronald, you believe just follow the money, and that's when you'll find out who killed Kennedy. All these conspiracies
yeah.
you just...
Yeah, no doubt, because, you know, Eisenhower warned Kennedy about the military-industry complex. This is the reason why we got all these military bases. They produce weapons we don't need because it's a big money-making venture. War is big business. We've been in perpetual war mode since World War II. We always had a war we was fighting money for our economy. That's what people don't realize. But, like, when Kennedy got knocked off, when they increased the troop presence in Vietnam, the helicopter industry took off. I mean, more helicopters were being built because of Vietnam. So,
yeah, but, you know, we spend more money creating war machines than 37 of the major countries altogether.
Yeah. So who are we fighting?
I agree with that. Y'all, did y'all know, and Ron, I'm going to leave your line open because you seem to know a lot about the Kennedy assassination, too. Did y'all know that they call this the Cold War? You know, whenever big things like this go on, there's always a cold word for those people who are insiders and know what's going on. They called it the big event. I guess when they were talking on the phone so other people didn't know what they were talking about, they referred to it as the big event. That was the code name for the Kennedy assassination. I mean, so that's you know. So it gives you an idea of, you know, it was definitely something that was premeditated by some folks and for them to have to create a code word to talk about it, I guess that people who were unbeknownst to what was going on would not know what they were talking about. And
you know,
Ronald was the one that passed on that documentary that I passed on to y'all earlier. Well, I'm sorry, was that you, Kufa? What were you saying?
Well, you know, I agree with Ron about the money, following the money thing, because, you know, when you read Unseen Hand by Ralph Ibsen, he talks about the International Monetary Fund and that Lincoln was trying to stop that from coming to America. And that was one of the main reasons why they killed Lincoln, not over slavery and whatnot, but that International Monetary. And then Michael Moore, he has a book, say, Dudes, Where's My Country? Where he breaks down what Ron just talking about, Halliburton and whatnot, these companies and Wall Street. He gives a very good account on that. And then we have a guy named Tex Mars who wrote a book on his Illuminati and all these circles. It's called the Circle Intrigue. It's the inner circle. It's called the hidden inner circle of the global Illuminati conspiracy. And that guy there.
Do we lose your geek over?
Hello, it's a conspiracy going on right now. What's going on?
One thing I hate to hear is when they think Lincoln was assassinated because abolishing slavery. See, the abolishing slavery had nothing to do with anything except to do with having some more people on your side to fight this war that they were having. It was actually to drain money from the South because that was the South making money. So he didn't abolish slavery for the good of the people or because he had a kind heart. He abolished it to weaken the other, weaken his enemy, and to add more people to his side. So, you know, everybody act like abolishing slavery was he had this kind heart. No, he was trying to win a war. It had nothing to do with the people or the color of the people. It had to do with we need the South to lose money. They're making money because they weren't paying. You know, then when you talk about that, it goes into reparations and all other things that nobody ever wants to talk about.
Yep, exactly.
And, y'all, another thing that I found in research, that basically, you know, Kennedy basically came to Texas because he was getting ready to run for president again in 64, and he was trying to get some of the old money to be a part of his campaign, you know, fundraising, that type of thing. So he was having a meeting at the trade market to speak to some of that old money here in Texas so that he could get them, I guess, to be donors for his campaign. That said, a lot of people felt like it was not safe for him to come into Dallas because there have been 100 murders committed in Dallas in the 10 months leading up to him coming here. And so, you know, it was a lot going on in Dallas. And so you wonder whose idea was it to really say, well, we can pretty much figure that out. But, that, you know, I found that very interesting that they would send him into such a dangerous territory, you know, in a motorcade, you know, where he wasn't behind, you know, windows that were protected. It just seems very odd, you know, that he didn't see
something. Dallas had so much money. Dallas was the money place. So, you know, you got to go to see the money makers to get the money. So it could have been set up to where, you know, we got these people that we want you to see that's got money. Not that you're going to get a chance to see them.
But it wasn't like he had to come in an open car. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just seems odd that he didn't see, like, wow, well, wait a minute. Or maybe he didn't know the history, but that's just something that came out that...
There was no history of anything like this in our nation as far as such an important person. So until there's history of something they look back on and say, okay, we can't do that again. You know, because just like the Pope used to travel just before he got into the Pope Mobile. He was out there in the open just hanging out with people.
True. Until, and like you said, until something happens, no one has that type of fear. It's not even there.
Yeah.
I agree. Y'all talking about the Warren Commission. They interviewed 190 people, allegedly. And it's just amazing that they interviewed 190 people and witnesses, and that's what they came up with. You know. Seriously. But that was the official story.
They had what they came up with before they interviewed 190 people.
They had what?
They had what they came up with before they interviewed 190 people. They just needed a number.
Exactly.
True, true. You know, a lot of people believe that report was whitewashed, and basically some of the people that were involved in the Warren Commission was Harold Ford, George H.W. Bush, Nixon. They were all in the Warren Commission. Just putting
so
it
out. So all the expected was a lawyer. Yeah, all expected was a Patty Bullock.
Can somebody get the names of who all was on the Warren Commission, the official list, so we can just, you know, make it clear just who all was on there. I mean, there was all of these folks became famous people. I don't think anybody got left off.
Boggs was on there, but he disappeared, you know, after on that plane trip back in the 70s when he was at the height of Watergate, when he was about to come to Watergate. Hell Boggs, a well-known Democrat from Louisiana. He disappeared back in the 70s over Alaska, someone with another congressman. But like, you had Arlen Specter, who was the lawyer who became a senator. Yeah, Gerald Ford, like you said, a lot of folks got paid off. Like I said, who benefits when the king is dead? And like the thing about it is, you can relate this to Dr. King. Speaking of kings, King was not a threat to the American establishment until he started talking about economic policy, sharing the wealth, the poor people campaign, about foreign policy. That's when he became a threat. That's when he had to get killed.
But the same time, he was their money. Is that actually started talking about the war in Vietnam, too.
No, he was messing with foreign policy and also messing with the money. He was talking about share the wealth. Like, well, Huey Long was saying back in the 30s, the kingfish who got killed. Some say by his bodyguards. I mean, anytime you start talking about the money, start messing with the money, and start talking about messing with foreign policy, you're a dead man walking. You're a dead man walking.
For April 4th, 1 year before he got assassinated, he's talking about an alternative form of government other than capitalism. That is the speech. Those are the words that specifically got him killed. Because when you say that, these people are thinking about communism. Poor whites are thinking about communism. And the real capitalists in this world, in this country, people who control the money, are thinking this guy is taking it. Like you say, he's trying to put more money into the hands of the poor, and he wants to change the way government. Okay? And bottom line, every black who was assassinated, along with Kennedy, Malcolm, Medgar Evers, all of them have some sort of economic plan. Medgar was getting people to vote on most. What bothered people about Medgar Evers is that he was doing independent media in the South, which is unheard of, or especially for a black man. You know, he had his own show and everything, and saying what he wanted to say. Martin, he scared the heck out of people. He started talking about an alternative government, another type of government. You know, but you know, that's the speech he gave exactly a year before the day he was shot. You know, so these people don't, they watch people very closely. If people think about, you know, a lot of people say, well, these people died because of what they did to the black. You know, that's superpower. The people control things don't care about the race thing. They leave that for poor whites. They think about the money.
Mm.
That's it. Okay, they leave it to the rednecks to worry about health care and segregation and all that. They don't think care less about that. You know? You protect their money, they'll protect you against Joe Sixpack and Joe the Plumber.
Mm-hmm.
But when you mention that money, they'll get you.
And I agree. And you know what? And speaking of I'll get you, there's a whole bunch of people that came up missing, whether that was through just disappearing, like what Brother Hearn just spoke of, in some plane or allegedly committed suicide or just ended up flat out murdered, that were connected to this assassination. So they were witnesses or just somehow connected to the story itself. Have y'all noticed how many people have just come up dead, you know, that had something to do with this?
Corpse don't speak back. Corpse don't have, you know, talk back. You know, that's why you kill people to keep a secret. But, you know, it's interesting. You talked about Jack Ruby earlier. You know, Jack Ruby told Gerald Ford and the Warren, I think Earl Warren was down in Dallas visiting Jack Ruby. He told them guys to bring me to Washington, D.C. I'll tell you what you need to know. I'll tell you everything. And he ended up dying of cancer in jail, quote unquote, cancer. And he's like Dorothy Kilgallen. Y'all ever heard of her? Dorothy Kilgallen, the famous journalist. She was the star on What's My Line, the TV show back in the day. She was a famous gossip columnist. Look up Dorothy Kilgallen. She actually went down to Dallas and interviewed Jack Ruby and told her friend, I got the story of the year. It's kind of like what happened to the guy earlier this year who got killed in L.A. in that fire crash of a car accident who wrote about General McChrystal. So she had this story she was working on, and they found her dead in her room with her makeup on, her hair still all in place, talking about she committed suicide. And then her best friend, who she told all this information to, ended up being found dead a day or two later.
Yeah.
And all her notes and her tapes and everything disappeared. All the stuff she had on the interview with Jack Ruby. And so he's like, you look at Lyndon B. Johnson, I mean, you look at the Kennedy case and all, some people say as many as 50 to 300 people were killed, whether it be witnesses, journalists, organized crime figures, politicians, people from all types of walk of life were knocked out by what they knew about the Kennedy assassination. So, I mean, it does surprise me when people say this is a conspiracy. I mean, if you can prove it, you know, I guess we live in a world based on conspiracy things. So everything is, you know, suspect.
I don't. You know what? I think this. I don't know when they're going to unseal the records, but I think that before from the time that he was assassinated until now, people are just dropping off. I mean, even in the documentary that we spoke of earlier, the lady said that she was the mistress of Lyndon Johnson, that her nanny accidentally saw him hug her. And Lyndon looked up and saw, LBJ looked up and saw the nanny and asked her, who is that? And she said, that's my nanny. Oh, don't worry about her. He said, get rid of her. And when she didn't get rid of her, the next thing she know, the nanny calls her one day and says, you know, I got something to do. What do you want me to do with the kids? And she said, take the kids to my mother's house, and I'll get them later. She never saw her nanny again. And she wondered for years what happened to the nanny, and later asked an insider, and by insider I mean someone connected to Lyndon B. Johnson in his circle, what happened to the nanny. She told him she'd often wondered what happened to the nanny, and the person said, you mean you don't know? And she was like, no. And he's like, we killed her, or they killed her. I mean, just because she happened to be at the wrong place at the right time, saw Lyndon B. Johnson hug his mistress, and that nanny ended up dead. So that's just how crazy. Say what?
No, I would say I agree with you. Lyndon B. Johnson was no joke. He was like the Michael Corleone. I mean, he killed his own sister, allegedly, for talking too much.
He killed his sister?
Right. Yeah, he had a hitman named Malcolm Wallace.
Yeah. And they had his sister in and out of, not for drug rehab, but she was alcoholic. So they, you know,
she was loose too, yeah.
And
wow.
She made a stain for him, and so she came up missing.
He killed this sister around Christmas time. He killed her around Christmas.
Yeah.
How cold blood he is.
No.
I mean, look at the job. They call him Lion Linden. I mean, think about this type of guy. You know, look up Bobby Baker. Bobby Baker was this secretary of the Senate. He was Lyndon B. Johnson's personal secretary when he was a senator, one of the most powerful senators we ever had. Bobby Baker went to jail back in the 60s for his dealings with organized crime figures, going to the vending machine industry with organized crime figures, you know, messing with the unions, running prostitutes through the Senate. I mean, he would do all types of nefarious and legal stuff on the behalf of Lyndon B. Johnson. If Lyndon B. Johnson not become president at the time he did, Lyndon B. Johnson would spend he would have died in jail. He went with the jail disgrace.
Yeah.
Lyndon B. Johnson was facing serious jail time around the time he became president. You look up somebody like Billy Sol Estes. Billy Sol Estes did business with him in Texas. He got in trouble and went to jail. Bobby Baker went to jail. A lot of people in Lyndon B. Johnson's circle went to jail.
Lyndon was getting
ready
to face.
He was on his way to jail.
Wasn't it Robert that was going to bring Lyndon up on charges for? What was the charges that he was going to get Lyndon up?
They were investigating him when Kennedy got knocked off in Dallas. I mean, the investigation was already on the way. I mean, he was just doing the proper things in office for a long, long time. Like I said, secretary went to jail, Bobby Baker. And I think he's still around, but I'm saying he went to jail for doing this improper stuff, having improper business dealings with organized crime figures, soliciting prostitutes and bringing them to the Senate, stuff like that, this type of graft and all this stuff, bribery, things of that nature. So Billy Sol Estes actually testified, one of his partners in Texas. I think he did like type of affidavit or testimony back in the 80s. And he said LBJ was one of the people that was behind the Kennedy killing. And he gave the reason why LBJ killed JFK. You know, I mean, they say allegedly up to 150 people, deaths are connected to Lyndon B. Johnson some type of way. That's not unusual for a president. You look at Bill Clinton. Look how many dead people around Bill Clinton and the Clintons in general. Think about Vincent Foster. Think about Ron Brown. Think about so many people that we know and don't know, they got killed in mysterious ways when Bill Clinton was president.
I've heard that. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think it's going to be like Ron said, it's not going to really matter who killed him. It's like, you know, the reason for his killing and who benefited from it, because I think the cover-up on this thing is so thick. I really do. I mean, I was just overwhelmed just in trying to figure out, okay, I thought by the showtime, y'all, I could figure it out, like, who killed Kennedy, but it just wasn't happening. It was just so many books out there with so many theories and so much information, and there were so many players. Did y'all see how many players were involved? This thing was so multi-layered with so many people involved. This wasn't just like two or three people that got together and decided in some dark room that they were going to knock somebody off. This had just player after player after player. I'm getting an echo from somebody.
But Terry, now Terry, a lot of times what happens is you add a lot of names to the list. Just like earlier I was saying, when they began tying Lee Harvey Oswald to Russia to deflect the story. So he had all his names to deflect the story, so everybody will find something wrong with everybody that name is on the list. So you try and logically tie them, because we didn't have what we have today as far as the Internet and all these other things and methods of finding information. So you're looking at the one source of information was the one that they owned, was putting out the story. So regardless of what you found, you was going to find the story they actually wanted you to read.
And, you know, speaking of putting out the story today, y'all, I was listening to another talk show host, and I'm sure all y'all are familiar with him. And anyway, he decided to take on this today, and he was down at Daily Plaza, which is the site, if you're not familiar with it, y'all, of the actual assassination. That said, he was down in downtown Dallas today, Austin, a show, if y'all familiar with who I'm talking about. But anyway, he was down there today, y'all. He took a crowd of people with his bullhorn, and, you know, he was raising ruckus, and he was saying, you know, he was going to get to the truth and this, that, the other. Well, anyway, long story short, they had allegedly told him and his group that once the official program was over, that he could take his group up and they could, you know, do whatever they want to do and have their moment of silence. That said, they were later assaulted by law enforcement here in Dallas. And I'm not sure if that was the police department or if it was the sheriff's department, but I know both of them were involved in some kind of way. At some point, he got clearance from the police department, and the sheriff's department, you know, allegedly assaulted him and his people. But that said, it was a lot of weirdness going on here in Dallas, y'all. I mean, it was like an official group of people were allowed to be at the actual spot. And unless you bought a ticket, you could not be a part of that. And if you didn't, you know, buy that ticket, then you were kind of pushed away, you know, from the actual scene itself. And it was just crazy. It was cold here today. It was very wet. It was miserable weather here. And a lot of people were disappointed. They had come from miles and miles away just to be a part of the ceremony, only to find out that they could not be a part of it. And I think actually one of the things that the mayor said, and I disagree with it, but, you know, he's the mayor, he said, you know, he didn't want any conspiracy theories. You know, he was going with the official story, and he didn't want anybody, you know, today talking about conspiracy theories. And I don't know if that was fair. Do y'all think that was fair? I mean, people have a right to believe whatever they want to believe, you know. So I was shocked that he took that stance on it, you know.
People have a right to their opinion. So if he's saying, okay, I don't want this to turn in, because when you throw out conspiracy theories, it could turn into a whole lot of.
Yeah.
So I think he was just trying to keep it peaceful, and we're just going to go with this story, and we're going to run it like this, and when it's over, y'all can do what y'all want to do. So it could have been
I was just disappointed, though, because I thought the uniqueness of the ceremony could have been all the people that came to gather that you know, wanted to discuss what they thought or what they felt or what they'd read. And I thought that would have been the uniqueness of the whole 50th anniversary. I don't know. But, you know, maybe – I don't know. But they just – that ain't what happened. Say what, AJ?
I'm just saying, a lot of times in order to keep order, you follow the scenario of what's put out there.
Yeah.
In order to keep
maybe that was the case.
He probably knows there's a lot of in people in with that, and he's the mayor. He said, I kind of want to keep my job too, so I'm not going to let y'all get up here and mess my job up.
And, you know, and that's probably true, because just as this thing has been controlled for 50 years, I'm sure there are some people that are still high up that want this thing still to have the same lid on it. So that's probably what happened here today. You know, we just weren't aware that they were still pulling cards, you know, 50 years later. But I think that calling the shots 50 years later. But I think that's probably what happened here today. But it was very disappointing for a lot of people that weathered the bad weather and went out there and wanted to be a part of, you know, being there at the actual location, and they were kind of put into another area. But that's just what happened, y'all.
My problem with a lot of these things, like these type of quote-unquote celebrations, commemorations, is that we are worse off now than we were 50 years ago.
Yeah.
We are worse off now than we were 50 years ago. You look at the march on Washington they had earlier this year. The economy was better 50 years ago than it is now. You had more jobs available for folks 50 years ago than you do now. I mean, what the hell are you celebrating for? We are in a police state. They showed you in Dallas today that we are in a police state. This is a thing that people like Kennedy tried to stop. He wanted more transparency. He wanted people to trust their government. He wanted more collaboration with people across all types of international and geographical lines. And this is what happens. When people stop questioning, when people start, I mean, 50 years ago, they didn't even follow their own protocol. People have been autopsied in Dallas. They're supposed to keep them in Parkland to do the autopsy. They violated their own law. If they had did that 50 years ago, maybe people would be more trusting of the government there and everywhere else. But if they had just followed protocol with the president, period, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. So they break the, I mean, when Dr. King got killed in Memphis, they cut down, they contaminated the evidence. They cut down the bush. They just contaminated, just like they did in Dallas. They contaminated the crime scene.
Yeah.
They did not go by their own book, but they want you to follow the law, but they don't follow their own law.
That's true. That's the disappointing part.
And that was a very interesting preacher. She sent me a carry on that guy, that preacher or senator, whoever he was, that he stepped aside and let him shoot or say, get a clear shot of Dr. King. That was where you come up with that at? That was very interesting.
That was Samuel Billy Cow, Memphis. Yeah.
Yeah, he said
that
too on the video.
I think Ronald remembers. He can tell you a whole lot more about that. But Samuel Billy Cowell did. He said he stepped aside so they could get a clear shot.
Yeah,
I heard him say it on the video. I heard him say that.
I don't know if that was a slip of the tongue, but he said he did it on that video. Didn't he say that, Ronald?
He said that on several occasions.
Yeah. He said, that's not a record now. And I don't know if he's just clearing his conscience. I don't know what's making him talk now. But, yeah, he's a prominent preacher in Memphis. I mean, he really is and has been for years.
I wish Steve Coke was a famous researcher. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. A famous researcher in what?
Somebody was talking before me. I didn't want to interrupt.
Is that you, AJ?
That was me.
No,
he doesn't say it like he has regrets or anything.
He did what?
He doesn't say it like he has regrets about it.
Oh, no, not at all. Samuel Kyles. No, he does.
Right.
But, you know, and I don't know if it's just an old man clearing his conscience or what, because I don't know what the point of saying it now is, because there's no way that you could have moved aside to make sure a person had a clear shot unless you knew the shot was coming.
Well, with Billy Kyles, I'm going to tell you the problem with Billy Kyles, this whole thing. 10 years ago, the SCLC had a conference in Memphis. The King Shaman came. I think Sister Coretta came. The late, great brother Steve Coakley, the great researcher, came. And the Final Call did a story that they alleged that Billy Kyles and Reverend Jesse Jackson was involved in King's assassination. They talk about how Dr. King did not trust Jesse Jackson. He thought he was there for ulterior motives when it came to the movement. He said, what's Jesse really here for? Is he here for the cause or here for himself? That was really one of the questions, to argue with Jesse and stuff towards the end. And Billy Kyles, they said Billy Kyles allegedly was a police informant. And the thing about Billy Kyles was he was cross-examined back in 99 when they had the civil trial about the King conspiracy back in 99 in Memphis. He talked to them about a sister that broke him down, caught him in his bar. And they came out with this commentary called Room 306. If you read Reverend Ralph Abernathy's book, the last hour of King's life was spent in meeting with the SCLC. They didn't have no Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and Billy Kyles moment for an hour in Room 306. That's a lie. But they passed around that lie as the truth, which is perplexing to me. Because all you got to do is read books and listen to folks that were there. But the thing about it is, a lot of people that was actually dead, they're dead now. Like brothers like Hosea Williams, really honorable brothers, and people like that, they're dead. They can't say it anymore. And people don't like to read for themselves and research for themselves. Basically, Kyles been going around telling a lie about him spending the last hour of King life in a room with Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy.
And two things. Wasn't it Samuel Kyles, or who was it that convinced King to wear the tie that night? And also, wasn't the photographer that took those famous pictures, wasn't he also an informant?
Yeah, Ernest Willis was an informant, a famous civil rights photographer. But I also tell people there's a difference between being an informant and being an agent. He likes, for example, he's a photographer, right? So he can take pictures of people. And then the FBI said, who's in that picture? Who's in that picture? You tell them who's in the picture and they'll pay them. So informants, mm-hmm. I think everybody on Facebook are informants. So you're telling people information. You're giving out information. But to be an agent provocateur is actually alter history. For example, Dr. King's itinerary secretary was named James Harrison. He was an actual agent for the FBI. This guy was responsible for making sure when Dr. King would be here and there, he would be there. What hotel stayed in? What transportation he took? This guy was responsible for what Dr. King would be at any given moment. As a matter of fact, when Dr. King got hit, he met with the FBI the same day Dr. King got killed. And somebody in his inner circle changed his room from the bottom stairs to the upstairs room, room 306 on the balcony.
Mm.
He got in his inner circle changed around his itinerary. So I'm going to cut the Reverend C.T. Vivian about it, one of his lieutenants. And he said he could forgive Ernest Withers because Ernest Withers did more for the movement than hurt it because he actually documented the movement. But he could not forgive the man who was Dr. King's itinerary secretary. He did not dare speak to him by name. He did not refer to him by name. But I know you were talking about James Harrison, who was on the SCLC payroll. Now, that's an agent provocateur. The guy who set up Fred Hampton in Chicago, William O'Neill, that's an agent provocateur. Ernest Withers was the informant. He was not the mastermind behind the killing Dr. King. Informant and agent. Go ahead.
That was true. And I think the thing is, when you're in those kind of positions, you cannot plan everything for yourself. I mean, you got to trust somebody, and a lot of times you're trusting people who are – you know, basically agents or whatever, or people who are out to see the bad things happen to you. I mean, that's why we got to pray for our current president, because it's a dangerous job. I mean, he's absolutely doing a dangerous job, and he absolutely has to put his life in the hands of other people every day. I mean, and it is absolutely a job I wouldn't even have. Now, you know, having done the research on this Kennedy assassination, I mean, there's no telling how many people that were in his inner circle that didn't have something to do with his death. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people that were probably in the car, part of the Secret Service detail, or, you know, in the White House with him every day. I mean, it's just muddy. I mean, this whole research for this show, I just found it to be really muddy waters. Did anybody else see it that way, that it's just really a creepy feeling to know that people that close to you were seeking your demise? I mean, did anybody else see it that way?
It is that way.
They were in the news just a couple of days ago.
They were what?
Think about Obama's Secret Service. They were in the news all the time. They were in the news a couple of days ago. The prostitution scandal. That's a very shady.
I'm sorry, what did they say about Obama's Secret Service a couple of days ago?
I forget exactly. It was some incident relating to it. It's an ongoing thing with them, but it was a new allegation, you know, and I just think that what's going on here is if JFK's Secret Service didn't really like him, what do we think of Obama's Secret Service?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Anybody else see it that way? It's just creepy.
Well, you know, he has several slips. I mean, the fact that that white couple could get into the White House while nobody's stopping them without the proper credentials, that's scary to me. Okay. Remember a couple of years ago when that couple got into the White House?
Yeah.
And then you look what happened in Colombia, like the brother talking about the prostitution scandal. But you know that when Kennedy got killed the night before Kennedy got killed, the Secret Service was out on a night on the town. They was at a strip club drinking, boozing, chasing prostitutes. That was 50 years ago. And that was Abraham Bolden, the brother who called in early about Abraham Bolden. I interviewed Abraham Bolden about that as well. So he warned his superiors about the lack of professionalism among some of his peers in the Secret Service. And the reason why he got sent to jail was because he wanted to testify before the Warren Commission about the improper attitude of the Secret Service. Because the day Kennedy got killed, they were actually seriously considering getting rid of the Secret Service. They were actually thinking about getting rid of the Secret Service. You know the irony of the Secret Service is? It was Abraham Lincoln that formed the Secret Service.
Oh.
It was Abraham Lincoln that formed the Secret Service. Look what happened to him. Okay. And now Obama's and also people understand that we hear about these top military generals being forced to resign. The way you overthrow a government is through the military. Back in the 1930s, it was a thing that came out. This guy named General Smedley Butler. Look up Smedley Butler. He's the one that said war is rat and war is hell. He was the most decorated Marine in United States history. He had 2 Medal of Honors. Normally, when you get a Medal of Honor, a lot of times you are really dead. You pop a posthumous Medal of Honor. But he won 2. He won 1 for the Boxer Rebellion. He won 1 for the Spanish-American War. And here what happened to him. Some of these banksters from Wall Street, I call them banksters, they came from Wall Street. They came to him back in the 30s and said, look, we want to get rid of FDR. We're going to overthrow the government. We're going to make you president. First, they were thinking about making MacArthur. They wanted to go to General MacArthur, but then they thought about, well, let's go to General Smedley Butler. Instead of him going along with the plan, he went to the press. He testified before Congress behind a closed session and told them this is what they told him. And people thought it was a joke, but it was true. They wanted to overthrow the government back in the 30s. Because if you got to think about it, 1930s was the closest time we ever had to come to a revolutionary change since the Revolutionary War or even the Civil War in this country. You had the unions, you had the communists, the socialists. You had a lot of progressive things going on in the country. If he was rebelling against Wall Street. So, you know, this is true. I mean, you overthrow countries through its military. That's what the United States do. We use other people's militaries to overthrow their countries and put our puppet masters, put the puppets in charge, excuse me.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Christopher Bonds, you've been quiet. You want to chime in?
Yeah, I was just going to say with what Brother Ron is saying, I mean, yes, I'm in the military. I know others have been, but that is true. And I think it's a lot of what's been said. A lot of people don't really want to do the work to research things. And we have different media outlets now. And even when you tell them the truth, there's a lot of people that have been so inundated with the lie that they look at you strange when you start saying things. And when you're saying things that are fact and you tell them, hey, you don't have to take my word for it. You can look this up. You can research it. You can actually go on the Internet and look in a book. So the thing with the government coup that's like down through the annals of ancient history. And that is what happens. And people think just because I'm in the military that I don't understand those things sometimes. But I tell people, a lot of times when we're in other countries, for whatever reason that our mission is there, 9 times out of 10, we're there to help an infrastructure of a government that has either been murdered or taken out of office and someone else has been installed.
So the best
we can do it is through the military.
Yeah, that rifle we talked about earlier, about the type that Oswald used, and I don't know nothing about guns, y'all, so I'm just going to call this as I see it here. They said it was a 6.5 millimeter Carcano?
Yes.
Model 9138?
You're right, but guess what? Now, the Warren Report is stating that too, but actually, the weapon that was found was a Mauser. It wasn't the same kind. And the serial numbers didn't match because Oswald ordered this weapon. It was like $12 or $13 for that carbine rifle. But the weapon that they were holding up was not the weapon that he ordered and allegedly used. There were two different brands, two different serial numbers. So people just saw that weapon and they were like, hey, that's the weapon he shot the president. That wasn't the weapon. That's the weapon they had.
Somebody even said that maybe those cases that were found in the books depository were actually maybe planted there. Some of those shell casings, that maybe they were actually planted there. It's just crazy. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. The stuff it's so many layers, and it just seems like that certain people put certain things in there just to cause confusion. You know what I'm saying? So that people would never really get to the truth of what happened. You know, and then, of course, say what?
You're right, and I was just going to say, and after a while, as it's been said, and you keep saying stuff, people will believe it because time passes, and then that becomes the truth when it's really not.
Yeah.
Like Billy Cow.
What do they say about a lie when you want people to believe it? That you can just keep it simple. You don't even have to complicate it. Just keep it simple. Like Oswald did it. It was just one bullet, you know. And a lot of people, some people believe that.
I have a friend that has a line. He said, on the shelf was the last lie, and they sold it as the truth.
I like that. I have to use that. I love that.
And now repeat that one more time. On the shelf was what?
It was the last lie. But they sold it as the truth.
The thing is, it's complicated. If you've ever been to Dallas, and I suggest if you ever come here, that you definitely go to Daley Plaza and see. But that's like a curved area that car was going around, y'all. A kind of sharp curve, too. You know, the motorcade was moving. There were people everywhere, you know, lining the streets to see him. I mean, and the books. Depository was up 6 floors, and there was a big oak tree right there. So it's just some really, I mean, and they said nobody's ever been able to recreate the shoot, the shot. Talking about the rifle, nobody's been able to do that in 6 seconds, like they're saying Oswald would have had to have done it.
But in the Warren Report, the final analysis, it says that all shots were fired from behind. I mean, it's right there in the Warren Report. So they don't even try and dispute that there was something fired from the front. So based on the pathway that you're talking about, it would have been impossible at the angle that they said Oswald or whoever the shooter was in the book depository to have shot the president from the front. But the Warren Report concluded that all shots were fired from the rear.
Wow. Okay, y'all, we're down to our last 12 minutes. Y'all got final thoughts on this, on Kennedy the man, Kennedy the assassination, Kennedy the legacy, you know. Y'all got any final thoughts on that?
I think Kennedy actually, his legacy to me is that a lot of times you don't come in something for the right reason, but when you see your purpose in forefront, you change for the right reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that changing that caused a problem, that he could actually see he could do good. He actually began to say things that mattered that people are still repeating today. So my thing is for everybody is a lot of times you may not be in the place you are for the right reason, but when you see the reason, change for the right reason.
I agree. So you think he was really, once he got into the job, you feel like he really had a change of heart, he really wanted to do a good job and be a good president, and because of that, you think that's why he was killed?
Well, I think he saw all the good he could do. He saw good being done. He saw how he could control or be in control of the process, or how, you know, when they say the end stops right here. I am the catalyst. I am the reason that this is going on. And when he saw that, he began to change the economic situation, working with other people to give civil rights and all the other things that he saw he could do. And I don't think anybody going to that job with that in mind, but when you see it, it is disheartening, or it can bring you up when you see what a big help you can be to not just you, but to other people.
You know, and before we move on to closing remarks from Chris and from Carl, another thing that this has led us to see, you know, 50 years later is, you know, one thing we've always wanted was a black man in the White House, but we've seen as African Americans just how hard it is to be a black man in the White House. And so you can imagine what Kennedy went through. Fast forward 50 years, what we're seeing an African-American president go through. And y'all, listen, it's been brutal. I mean, y'all agree with that? It's been brutal?
Well, anytime you have a whole group of people for 4 years say, our only goal is to make you a one-timer. So you don't pass anything, don't vote for anything, turn down everything, and then blame the person that you made fail for the failure. I'm saying I think it's brutal.
Well, that's the black experience in a nutshell, right? I mean, that's for any black person in America.
You are right, Ronald. And I think we forgot that. I think we thought all we needed was a black man in the White House and all of our problems would go away. But, you know, what we found out was when the black man got to the White House, it's doubly hard or triply hard to be a black man in the White House, because if you think they treat you bad on this level, you can see how bad they'll treat you even on that level.
But one other thing, Carrie, I want to add is that, see, what it did to put a black man in the White House was to give them the validity, cancel a lot of these rules, affirmative action, and all those. Y'all don't need that anymore. Y'all have a black man in the White House. But the goal was to lessen our ability to do what we do as far as equal rights, as far as colleges, as far as all these other things that these affirmative actions and these rules were doing is bringing balance. It was to cancel those out because you don't need them anymore now that you've reached the highest level attainable in the United States of America. And then prejudice became so prevalent that it's not hidden anymore. As long as you're politically correct, you can be as prejudiced as you want to be directly to your people.
And, you know, one thing that President Obama ran on was change, and we see 50 years later, change is not an easy thing here in America. When you start talking about change and better days for the poor, it becomes like, you know, the worst thing in the world to happen for some groups because they don't want to share the wealth.
They're making money on the poor. You're making money on the poor, you know, when you have a people that you don't even own stores in your neighborhood. You don't even own the houses you live in. So this money is going out to other people. So when you begin to, I guess, fortify or reinstate the financial ability of a group that's going to cancel you out, you are affecting somebody else's income.
True.
And, you know, I think AJ is saying something, and I'll just throw my toes in there real quick. AJ is saying something that's monumental. That is a fear in white supremacy and white America. White America used to see black folks in the community, in the socioeconomic world, with some control. But since we've essentially lost that control, a lot of things they do, it's like that mayor, the new mayor in New York, and with the black wife, that's calculated. The goal is to try to make black folks think that they have arrived when we don't really own anything. We own our own businesses. We don't have our own internal commerce. Once we push towards that, if we think we have – that is the thing to do. But if we think we have it bad now, it's really going to become bad, because when you really try to invoke empowerment, which is the reason you see a lot of these entertainers and athletes, they do trinkets, they do small things, but they're not really doing things on an internal socioeconomic level. But with that being said, I think that JFK was pursuing those things, and I think also the reason that they had to then take his brother out is that his brother was going to win in that next election, and he was basically going to be somewhat of a carbon copy of what his brother was. So it's a thing that was going to happen. That wheel was in motion, but they were ensuring, I mean, they killed both the brothers, and both the brothers had similar like minds, or it had grafted towards that. So I think that what JFK was trying to do is all of what was said, and our current President Obama, he has it hard. He's basically going to have to get in there, throw a few pitches, get what he can get, and then he's going to get out. So it's going to be on us in the black community to unite grassroots level to do all that we can to get that black socioeconomic base and that power back.
That's great.
Yeah, we voted for change, but we didn't know change looked like we looked in the mirror.
This is so true.
Scared us when it showed up.
Mitchell. I'm sorry, go ahead, JJ. No, go ahead, finish, AJ.
I was saying we voted for change, but we didn't know what change looked like. But when we saw it, it frightened us, too.
Maybe that's what happened. Carl Mitchell, final closing remarks.
Well, you know, we did the Warren Commission's final report, which was 888 pages long. That was presented to President Lyndon B. Johnson on September 24, 1964, and was made public 3 days later. And now the report concluded Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone in killing the President John F. Kennedy and the mooning of Texas Governor John Connally, and that Jack Ruby also acted alone in the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, the commissioner's findings have since proven controversial and been both challenged and supported by later studies. That's my final word.
Those are your final words. Well, y'all, listen, I have enjoyed this conversation. I mean, I really thought about, like, maybe not doing this topic. I was like, it's just too overwhelming. Well, I'm so glad I invited the right folks to come on with me tonight to help break it down. So my guest tonight, thank y'all so much. As always, y'all deliver. Mr. A.J. Houston, Mr. Christopher Bonds, and Carl Mitchell, thank y'all again so much. Also reminding y'all that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also a reminder, y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. We break down the news in only a way Center Stage can do. So come back here. Join us each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Again, in closing, I'd like to thank my guests, A.J. Houston, Christopher Bunz, Carl Mitchell. I'd like to also thank Chris Stevenson for stopping by tonight. He's with the Buffalo Bullet. Check him out. He's online, y'all. And also thank you to Ronald Hurd for stopping by. Ronald Hurd is with We All Be Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio. Check out his shows. I think it's Sundays at 5 p.m. Am I right, Ronald? Sundays at 5?
Yeah, like from 3 to 5 Central.
From 3 to 5 Central.
Yeah.
Check out his show. I call him the historian of historians. So, y'all, listen, we're going to close out tonight with just a couple quotes from John F. Kennedy. He was quite the man at giving some very thought-provoking quotes. So I'm going to start with this one. First of all, it says, change is the law of life, and those who look only to the past or present are certain to miss the future. That's a John F. Kennedy quote, y'all. Also, he said, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Another John F. Kennedy quote. And I'm going to close with the final one, y'all. He said, forgive your enemies, but never forget their names. Okay, y'all, that's gonna be it for us tonight. But listen, I've enjoyed breaking down remembering JFK. I hope that, you know, maybe this history helps you all better understand exactly what happened to Kennedy. as far as his assassination is concerned. We didn't necessarily figure out who done it, but at the same time, I think we're going to have to agree with Brother Ronald Hurd. Just follow the money, and that will pretty much tell you who benefited from it, and that will probably lead you to exactly who done it. So listen, thank you all. Join me again here next Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. See you then. Bye-bye.